kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. We have a fun review show lined up because that's all we ever do on these episodes anymore. But it's always fun when you start off with Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you?
I'm doing great, though the heat can kiss my black ass. And yeah. I'm watching a friend's dog today. So as a result of that, I had to walk the little terror outside in the heat because dogs need that for pooping. And I think I was talking to you about before, but I think the sun is at an all-time evil high because I think it was stabbing me in the neck. A shooting pain went from the top of my neck down almost immediately after I stepped outside. And it went away. It's actually subsiding now that I'm going back in the house. It is weird.
So you got shanked by the sun.
Yes, I did. That Mario sun is packing now.
Damn.
He ain't messing around. But people have to say, hey, you know, stop complaining about the summer, man. Here's a picture of Detroit in the middle of winter. Like, fuck you, there's fall. I want that. Spring was cut short. I wanted that.
We never got spring.
Pretty much. It was like there was a week of it for us here. It was like 1 week where the weather felt great, and you could step outside without shooting yourself in the head to just make the pain go away, and then you find yourself smack dab in summer again. You're like, God damn it. I can't even pick up a gun in this weather. It melts. It just melts. Everything's bad in the summer. People talk about going to the beach. Yeah, the beach is great if you got money.
Yeah,
which or I don't. You and me both, friend. And then you also got to figure, you know, people are like, what's your summer vacation? Like, who are these people going on summer vacation that aren't children? Oh, teachers. Fuck you, teachers. Who am I kidding? We love you, teachers. You deserve you deserve the break. But I'm also really jealous of you only during the summer months. Really jealous. But
oh man,
watches that one person that doesn't hear the rest of that statement and just goes, fuck you, teachers. Well, then
you're never listening to this show again.
You insulted the teachers of America. I did not. I said I'm jealous of them.
Both my listeners are going to be so pissed at what's going on with this.
I feel you on that, man.
We should probably talk games, though, huh?
I guess so.
Because the first game that we're doing today, it's not a review. We're not starting off with a review. We are starting off with an early preview of the game Insane Robots, developed and published by Planiac. It's releasing July 10th on PS4, July 12th on Steam, July 13th on Xbox One. I believe the planned price point is $15.99. Fight to the death in this unique card battler. Compete in intense one-on-one duels, lead a riotous robot rebellion through randomly generated survival arenas, overthrow a malevolent robot despot in this epic 15-plus-hour single-player campaign. Insane Robots is card battling hacked. Pernell, tell us about it.
Well, you are pretty much a robot. I guess you can change robots later on, but earlier just like some chef robot named Franklin who finds himself thrown into the arenas, literally, because he is considered defective, and he is defective because he knows how to ask questions. Fancy that, right? So, as a result,
how dare he
ask why he's here, what the purpose of existence happens to be. You're a robot, act like it. But, unfortunately, by being thrown into this arena, it means that he has to fight to the death with other robots for a title which makes, I don't know why it's there or where it's going to go, but that's why this is a preview. Because we don't know yet. But the idea is that you are essentially on like a hexagonal map, which I actually kind of like because I've missed hexagon combat. And on each turn, you can pretty much move around a certain map to look for random events that show up on the map that can yield money or items or other enemies that you can fight. And when you come across another robot enemy, the game is actually kind of cool. It goes into a one-on-one, a 1v1 arena where you have a variety of slots that you can attach chips to your robot for. You don't get to choose what deck of chips you get. Like, don't think Mega Man Battle Network or nothing. The game pretty much gives you the chips. But you can apply augmentations that kind of can help influence what kind of chips you get. Like, there may be an augmentation that says you get more attack chips per round or more defense chips per round. And you take those chips and you can equip them on either your robot, or sometimes you can affect the actions and chip equips of your of the opponent robot. Like, when you mention the word hacking, that's part of it. There are certain chips that will allow you to negatively impact the values on the chips of the enemy. So you'll get, say, two attack chips, two attack slots and two defense slots. And if this isn't making sense because of how I'm talking about, hit me with a question or so and I'll streamline it down a bit. But this is weirdly how the game goes. So there's two attack slots and two defense slots. And each chip can have up to a five value, 1 to 5. And once you equipped a chip into both slots, the attacks, both attack slots or both defense slots, you can initiate an attack. So the attack slot pairing would mean that, hey, I've got a 3-chip and a 3-chip on both slots, which gives me a total value of 6 attack power. I'm going to attack this opposing robot. And if he doesn't have a pair of defense chips already slotted, then you're going right for the throat, straight attack damage. Otherwise, the defense chips will soak up some of the blows until, you know, either A, you exhaust the defense chip, or it exhausts your attack.
Yeah.
And essentially, that ends up being like battles. Like, the opponent does the same to you, and you're constantly trying to steal each other's chips or negatively impact the chips so that when it's time for someone to attack, they might get waylaid or delayed. And it ends up being this weird tug of war of determining who's going to attack first and when. And it gets to be pretty interesting because you'll think you're ready to go, but you don't have enough attack or AP, which would be like action points, to fulfill the attacks. You have to wait around to use your super boosted attack power. And then the opponent does a swap and steals your attack from you and beats the tar out of you. So yeah. Things like that can happen.
It sounds overall like something that's easy once you get your hands on it, but it's not as easy putting into words.
I think that's what it is. And maybe by the time the game comes out fully, maybe it'll flow even better for me. But essentially, that is pretty much the meat and potatoes of the game. You go through like a campaign mode. Well, I won't go into the specifics of all that because this is a preview.
Yeah, but we'll save that for the full review, probably a couple of weeks down the line. But is it what you've been doing so far? Are you having fun with it?
I think so. Honestly, when you sent me the clip, I was like, yeah, this game needs a preview because I'm not very jazzed by it when I look at it, which is a good thing because once I got it and started playing it, the humor had me chuckling. And I do like the idea of a card. I like card battlers in and of themselves. And I like the fact that this game is trying something a little different about it. And the humor runs throughout it. It seems like it's going to be a game that I'm wondering if they're going to make any changes or updates to it as it comes along. But I'm having fun so far. And I'm looking forward to how the final product flows.
Nice. I am looking forward to hearing more about it as well. And again, we'll probably have a full review of that either, I don't know, 2 weeks, something like that. I don't know. Math is hard. I can't do it right now. It's too goddamn hot to do math. It is. I don't know if you could hear just the dryness in my throat from how hot it has been. And I just can't even drink enough water. It is insane.
Which reminds me, when this episode's done, I got to stop drinking beer and start drinking water. Beer does not hydrate, folks. Remember that. It does not hydrate.
Very true.
It's wet, but it will kill you.
So next time you go on a run, make sure to bring water and not beer.
It goes for you hashers. You know what I'm talking about.
Plus on a run, all the jumping, like all the bouncing from the run, it might shake up the beer, and you don't want that.
That is true. Though hashers just leave beer caches hidden out in the woods.
That's a smart idea.
It is, but then the dehydration still sets in.
Yeah,
You're just dehydrated in a small cache in the woods.
But anyway, you do have one game to give a proper review tonight, and that is called Runbow, developed by 13AM Games, published by Head Up Games, released July 3rd on the Switch for $14.99, with tons of competitive modes for up to 9 players online and 8 players locally, and a massive single-player adventure. Runbow is the crazy color-based platformer you've been waiting for. Are you ready to Runbow? Purnell, were you ready to Runbow?
No, I wasn't. Review over. Now, actually, this game intrigued me because there's another game I played sometime last year for the PS4 called Hue, which is a puzzle platform that makes a similar appeal to like using colors to obscure or create platforms.
Mm-hmm.
And Runbow isn't a puzzle game. It is an action game. So it's a concept that I love done in a completely different way. So jumping on this game, I gave it a die. And obviously, I'm spoiling the ending of the review already, but I liked this game a lot, as hard as it is. It is hard. So the idea is that there are multiple modes, but the main mode that I dabbled in, because I'm a single player in a single player world, is the adventure mode. An adventure mode is one where a monochrome female character is upset because the world is colorful and she is not. So she wants to be bad. So as a result of her badness, you as a colorful human has to go through a series of stages to stop her from being evil. And how that flows is you get placed aboard a large board, like a 12 by 24 grid. And you start in the lower left corner, and each square on this grid represents a stage. And when you enter the stage, there will be a variety of objectives, whether it be catching an item, killing an enemy, reaching the end of the stage, or I think there may be even a few other ones that I haven't even seen yet, because there's a lot of stages. But what happens here is, when you're doing the platforming, as you play, everything in the level is a different color. But there's all in the background is a different color. But every once in a while, a light, like basically the color of the background, will actually shift and change to a different color. And when that change occurs, any platforms or objects that were the color of the background become obscured, thereby no longer existing. So
yeah, that's neat.
It's an interesting, frustrating ordeal. Because sometimes you'll be tasked with jumping across a series of platforms all hovering above a pit. And then as the background changes, the platform you're standing on just disappears and you will fall. You find yourself having to become good at knowing the order of which the color shifts occur and the timing between them so that you can gauge when you can make your hops and jumps to do what you need to do. If enemies show up on the screen, there's a very simple combat system where you push the punch button and you swing a punch. Or if you're in the air and push the punch button, you will throw a punch in the midair kick. But sometimes if you double tap punch, you can do an air dash. Or if you push up and attack, you do an uppercut dash. So all those things can be used to fight enemies and to also help you maneuver through levels. It gets to get kind of wacky and redunculous. There was one level I thought I did not expect to see that where the level inverted itself completely and it made you jump across a series of waterfalls. And whereas earlier I mentioned the background would change color, in this case, it was the waterfall itself that was changing color. It was the water was cascading downward and there were different layers of different colors in the waterfall. And
oh,
you were jumping
really
from log
cool.
to log. Oh, it was. It's really awesome. You'll be jumping from log to log, and the water effect will trickle over the log, making logs on the waterfall disappear. So you're like, crap, which one to hop over, which ones to avoid? And you're kind of dodging and freaking out about that. And when you get there, there's four different levels that conclude with a boss fight with Saturna, the monocolor maiden. I just made that up, monochrome maiden. and they're not really boss fights where I gather. It's another obstacle course where the goal is to reach her at the end and then punch her in the face.
Makes sense.
It does, because she's being a real jerk and everybody's trying to have fun and she just wants to be bad by doing something, which I still don't know what it is that she did, but she's doing it and it's naughty. But if you're not doing adventure mode, I did dabble in one of the other modes that didn't require multiplayer, and I do at least know what the other multiplayer modes were. There was another mode called the Bowels of the Bowhemoth or something like that, where a giant worm eats a checkered flag or the trophy that you typically collect at the end of an adventure mode stage. So you jump into its mouth to chase the trophy through its digestive tract. And that translates into a really, really difficult platforming section that has no checkpoints. But it is fun to just kind of challenge yourself. It keeps track of how many times you've died and then a time as well. So when you finally get to the end of it, it's like, hey, you died 200 times and it took you 20 minutes to get here. Don't you feel terrible? You should. You died a lot. But it's also still
fun. You did bad and you should feel bad.
You should feel bad, exactly. But those are the two main single-player modes, but there's three multiplayer modes that seem pretty cool. One of them is a general race mode. So you can go in and tell the game how many rounds you want it to be, how many players you want it to be. No computer players, unfortunately, all humans. Mm. And you essentially are tasked with running through. Each round is a stage. The game will say, here's the first stage, do it. And you have to run through it. If you die, you're out of that round. So there's no respawning until the end. It's just, if everybody dies, everyone loses that round. But if you get to the end, ta-da, you get a checker mark for beating a level. And then at the end, whoever got the most round victories wins the game. Sounds simple, and it is simple, but that's also why it's a lot of fun. It doesn't take a lot of explanation. You don't have to get a bunch of people up to speed. You don't have to explain a bunch of complicated mechanics. It's just, here's your controller. Don't fuck up. And there it is.
Just go.
Just go. There's a King of the Hill mode where you're basically just beating each other up to determine who can stay on a platform the longest. And the other mode, and that's the one that's eluding me right now, but it's basically a mode that I never got a chance to play because I'm not playing with other humans. But it's rough, but I do look forward to getting a chance to play this with other humans when I get my Switch out into the public sphere, since this has that Switch portability, baby.
Yeah, boy.
Wiimote, individual Joy-Con, so you have instant two-player options right off the bat. That's what I like about the Switch, because I find myself in a situation where I might be out and about, maybe at a friend's house, like, hey, I'll just plug my Switch into your TV, and we can utilize it. Big, easy. Because I always carry enough stuff to actually be able to just play it without even having a dock if they don't have one. But when I do have a dock, I just jam it in their dock and done. But it's honestly, this game has been really good, and I look forward to getting more multiplayer antics in once I get a chance to. But this is a good game. I enjoy the living daylights out of it.
Nice. And so for the $15 price tag, what do you think of it?
If you're a platforming buff and you're okay with, you know, well, like Super Meat Boy-esque level difficult length of time, Super Meat Boy-esque length level length, maybe add an extra minute to each one, then I definitely recommend this game. I had a blast with it. I am intending to play more of it, and the music in the game is really good. I only wish there was more music in the different worlds, because it seems to be like one or two tracks per world, whereas it should be like five, because this music is just that good, and I want more of it.
Nice. Yeah, soundtrack is really good to that game.
Mm-hmm. I'm humming it now in my head.
Well, Pernell, I will continue to allow you to hum in your head. Always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Where are your travels taking you next?
I'm going to Orlando, Florida for Dice Tower Con. Damn. It is a game convention. So, Broketown, USA, here I come. I will be spending the next 4 months paying off this summer's adventure debts. It was worth it, though.
Is that like a tabletop convention?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you better bring those books you got.
I'm going to try to. Like, my friend even suggested, I was like, I don't know if people will play that kind of tabletop, but I'll lug it along, and if someone wants to play it, we can give it a shot.
Yeah, give it a go, because we're going to be dabbling into our first tabletop RPG review soon. Pernell, you got two pretty cool games that we had sent to us that you're going to try giving a go.
And Mutant something, who's eluding me, but Tales from the Loop was the one I was like, yee-hee. But I know even if I can't pull it off at Dice Tower Con, the plan is hopefully to get at least a few of us together to play it the weekend after to get a sit down with it.
Sounds good. I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more on that. But again, Pernell, always good having you on. Any final words to sum it up?
Drink water. Lots of water and beer, but mostly water. But damn, beer is good. Thank you.
right, moving on. Next game to talk about is called Gunbird 2, developed by Psycho, published by Zero Div. It released June 21st on the Switch for $7.99. Five characters with distresses went out for an adventure to get the medicine that was handed down from the ancient times. However, they need to gather three materials and meet the god who lives in an illusionary underground temple to be able to get the medicine. Will they be able to get the medicine before the Queen pirates? I don't know, but the person who does know, Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing good. Very happy to have been playing Gunbird.
Were they able to get the medicine, or were you able?
Oh, of course. Actually, I got every one-player ending in the game.
Holy shit. You've been busy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, I love Psycho shooters. And, of course, the Zero Div ones are excellent because you can set the difficulty and the amount of lives and infinite continues, whatever you like.
Hooray!
Hooray!
So
what is Gunbird 2?
Well, it's the sequel to Gunbird, which what? I did. I know. And I had talked about it before. So let's see. Sorry. I was looking for something right quick. Space Bomber. That's the one. Okay. So Gunbird 2 is the sequel to Gunbird. It retains characters that are extremely reminiscent of the characters from the first game, except for one character who transfers over, and that's Marion, the 13-year-old witch, with her weird cat doll type person that travels with her. You've still got the cool robot who is fighting on behalf of some foreign army that's kind of fashioned after communist Russia, but we never say what country he's from. And of all things, we have an adolescent Alucard from...
What?
Yeah, I guess a guest appearance from Castlevania or something. Okay. Or just from lore. Yeah. But this is the like sort of teenaged hipster Alucard with like the sort of trendy haircut and glasses, and he purports to be only 300 years old. So
it's the Alucard that listens to My Chemical Romance.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
And so yeah, you have like some different characters than the last one, but they all play kind of similar to the others. And of course, the name of this game, like the plot, is unapologetically set up exactly like the last game. So in each stage, you collect a piece of something that allows you to summon another thing that you then have to fight, and then the ending is you getting your wish. Usually, the endings are very comedic, so it ends up being just like a gag or something like that, because it is Psycho, and Psycho likes to add an element of fun to their games. And like, while this isn't as straight up goofball as a game like, I think it's Space Bomber that I was like looking at, like they have some just ridiculous games, but this one kind of Space Bomber is the one where it's just utter ridiculousness. This one kind of goes the line between being a proper like vertical shooter, not quite a bullet hell, although this one is more bullet helly than the first game. There's a lot more bullets on screen. Yeah, bullet hell-esque. Bullet hellish? I guess that would be right. So it's a little bit busier on screen. Oh, and of course, most large robots and every boss are piloted by a group of like pirates, like exactly like the Trump family in the first game, only now it's the I think it's the pirate queens, even though only one of them is a girl. And the dumb looking one is named Gimmick, and I'm kind of upset about that, but that's all right, I guess. Got Gimmick, Blade, I think, and Shark. Anyways, and so they provide... It's weird, because they're like not even really funny or anything, they're just there. Like they just kind of... I think they say stuff that's funnier in Japanese, but this game, the translation isn't quite as over-the-top, so it's not quite as jokey, but you can tell that there are jokes going on. But of course, the endings are like almost purely like total jokes. So anyway, between Gunbird 1 and Gunbird 2, what also has changed is that so now we have, on top of our regular shots, which, you know, you just pepper the screen constantly with bullets. And then you have bombs. You also now have a special secondary move that you can use as many times as you like. It's not numbered like a bomb, but it is... it works off of a gauge, which, so as you shoot more enemies and get more points, the gauge goes up. And when it hits level 1, then you get to use a level 1 attack. And if it goes to level 2, you get to use a level 2 attack. And usually it's just a much stronger shot that you get to use, like, you know, helps take down bosses a lot easier. And also, like the other game, and I actually didn't know this was a feature in the other game. I beat it several times without even knowing this, but if you hold down the Y button, it shoots your regular shot, but if you hold it down, it actually does a charged up short range shot. Uh-huh. So, like, your robot will throw out a punch, or Alucard will whip his cape at the thing. And those are great for taking down bosses, and they also help clear a little path in the bullets if they get to be too much. Little hard to master, but, like, they're still there. The game actually gives you a tutorial screen before you start, which is the reason I knew that, like, because the first Gunbird does no such thing. It just tells you regular shot.
Nice.
So, I like that. Probably the biggest thing for me in that I like to, like, with the first Gunbird, I played it every kind of way I could, because every ending has a multiple choice, and so I would beat it twice with every character and choose both options just to see every single ending. This one takes it a step further, because whereas in the first game you had to, you know, every combination of characters in the two-player mode would have a different ending, so you had, like, a lot more potential endings if you had a friend to play with you, but since I obviously don't, they fixed it for the second one. I think this is a zero div feature. This isn't a feature of, I don't think it's a feature of the original arcade game, but if you push X to start your game instead of A, then you will start it in two player mode where you choose both characters and you just alternate between them in lives. So one character dies, next character jumps in. Yeah. And the story mode that it gives you is that of, you know, the combination of characters.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So it sounds like there's a shitload of content in this game.
Yeah, it's just as long as the first Gunbird. Graphics are improved. Music's about the same. Fun factor is it's still one of the best shooters out there. So, I mean, it's definitely worth picking up if you're a vertical shooter fan or new to the genre, because it's not going to overwhelm you, and you have... Endless continues, and this one doesn't actually... 2 is a little easier than 1, because if you throw on the infinite continues, you don't ever have to start a level over.
Oh, that's good.
Psycho games usually make you start the last 2 levels over again once you get a game over, no matter what. So, really, the only reason to not ever get a game over in this game is just to have a better score, which, you know, if you're playing for score like a nerd, then you're probably better at shooters than a beginner. So there you go.
Well, I'm sure I know the answer to this one already, but for $8, what do you give it?
Yeah, $8. It's great. Absolutely get it. The only other way it's available is as a Dreamcast disc, and I believe they're pretty pricey now. So
I'm sure they're more than $8.
Yeah, definitely get this one if you're a fan of the original, if you're a fan of Psycho, or just a fan of good old 90s vertical shmups in really nice translations with lots of extra features.
And I'm guessing it has a vertical screen mode?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Which would be perfect for the Flip Grip.
Yeah, that good old Flip Grip coming out.
I'm so excited for that thing.
You know, I actually just said it has vertical mode. I'm not even sure. I think it does, because the other one did.
Yeah.
It's zero did.
But you had to out yourself as not being sure. You could have just wrote off that. Yeah, of course it is.
I could have been so confidently wrong. Actually, it was on the list of games for the Flip Grip. I think that's what I was going off of, because for the Kickstarter, they actually, because old the internet's Jeremy Parrish is involved, they had to make a super list of, like, all the games it'll possibly work on. All right, let's see. Display settings, display orientation. We do have vertical mode.
All right, so it has been confirmed.
Is confirmed right here live on the SML podcast.
Exclusive live on SML.
Chris Taylor finishes his review.
Sweet. Well, you do have one more game to talk about, and that is called Yuso, developed and published by Vertical Reach, coming out July 5th on the Switch, again for $7.99. Take on the role of a space doctor traveling the solar system, moving from planet to planet, meeting the inhabitants, and completing their stages. A quirky cast of characters will help you on your journey. Yuso can look cute, but don't let them fool you. Levels get increasingly more difficult, and later stages are tough. Chris, what is this game?
Oh boy, Yuso. I don't really know that I got that much story out of it. Although I did notice that it takes place in the solar system, and you start on Mercury like you do, and somebody comes to yell at you about what you're doing and like teach you how to play the game, and they're like all based on, it seems like they're based on gods. So I guess Mercury is like Hermes or something like that, and then like Venus is Adonis for whatever reason. I don't know. But I don't know how all that mythology stuff works. But yeah, so this is really just, it's a puzzle game. There's no story to it. The name of the game, or the point of the game, basically, is to, you have a field with all these different colored, like, blobs-looking things. I guess those are the Yuso. And when you touch one and it explodes, it takes out all of the adjacent ones that are the same color. However, you can only burst one when there is one next to it that is the same color, so you can't pop them one at a time. So you basically have to make sure that you do it in an order where you end up, like, the last touch ends up popping, like, you know, all of the remaining critters on the screen. And so, of course, they quickly make this as difficult as possible by introducing, of course, other colors. So let's say you have some blues next to some greens. Well, if you pop the greens, it will actually turn the blues adjacent to the greens into greens. So then you have to, like, strategize on changing colors of, like, the different different Yusos in order to complete those puzzles. And then, like, they just keep building up. Like, all of Mercury is just showing you, like, all the different things they're going to throw at you. Then they have Yusos that are asleep. So they're asleep, and you have to hit them once, and that wakes them up, and it doesn't change their color. And then the next time you pop them, then they'll actually go away and work like the regular ones. So it's just like a 2X sort of Yuso. And then they also, they put bombs of certain colors on the screen. So after a certain amount of turns, those bombs will go off and will change the color of everything around it.
Oh, God.
And so you have to plan around that, too. And, like, right around the second level, they just start throwing all those things into the mix. And suddenly you're left with this big, complex field of, like, stuff that you're supposed to touch. Now, like any good casual puzzle game, this one is very good about sort of letting you do trial and error if you can't figure it out immediately. So there's a button either on the screen or the touchscreen. This is actually a really intuitive game on both controller and touchscreen, so I like that about it a lot.
I was going to say, it sounds like something that's easier in practice than in trying to explain what it is.
It is, yeah, but it's all right. What was I saying, though, about it? Controller. Oh, yeah, so with a certain button push or, you know, touching the icon on the screen, you can actually rewind your actions one at a time all the way to the beginning. So if you find that you've kind of painted yourself in a corner, but you don't want to start the whole puzzle over again, then you can just keep rewinding until you get to where you want to get to.
That's good.
Yeah, that really, really helps out. And it doesn't take away from the challenge, because the challenge is ludicrous. Around level 16, it becomes, like, just this huge brain teaser. And, I mean, like, all of the Mercury levels are, like, light and breezy, but as I started getting into the Venus levels, I was just like, oh, wow, this is actually going to take a while. But it's nice and chill. It's got a good vibe. Animation's beautiful. It's very tactile and friendly. And of course, the characters you talk to are varied, and you know, they're charming for what they are, which is just introducing you to levels. Kind of like Tetris Attack, you know?
Yeah.
It's like they're not really there for anything but just flavor, but it's nice that they're there.
Nice. So $8 on this one. What do you think?
$8 for sure. If you've been playing stuff like I have, like Hex Logic, and you know you find that you're sort of burning through levels at a fast pace, this one will slow you right down. So, puzzle fans that are looking for much more of a challenge, I think, should definitely get into this one. And I think people who are not intimidated by something that ramps up a little bit, but like stuff that's easy to figure out, then, you know, this game, like, it's difficult because of the logic involved and the steps involved rather than trying to figure out what to do with it, you know? So it's not like your Sudokus or your energy balance or whatever.
Yeah, I think you may have sold me on this one. This is something, like, looking at pictures of it, it looks incredibly confusing, but you describing it, it sounds really fun, so I might have to grab this one myself.
Yeah, it's all about experimenting with what does what and trying to get to a certain point within turns. And, of course, you can start to see a few moves ahead, which is what I always enjoy in a puzzle game, is when you start thinking ahead of yourself and, like, try to catch up. So, yeah, I think this is a really well-made game that's worth the $8, as long as you don't mind that it's a bit on the rough side.
Sounds good.
Cool.
Good stuff. Well, Chris, always good having you on chatting about these games. Any final thoughts?
I think the cat's got a knife, so I better go defuse this situation.
All right, next game to talk about is called Foxtail, developed and published by Ginger Tips Game Studio, released March 1st onto Steam Early Access for $6.99. Foxtail is a classic quest inspired by mid-90s games, complex quests and freedom in solving them, an interesting plot, beautiful graphics, and of course, an atmosphere of mystery and adventure. Checking this one out, Royal Sefton, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm hanging in there. How about you?
Oh, it is hot.
Yes.
That's about all I could say. That's all I could say without sweating onto the microphone. That's all I could say.
Ow.
The sun, it burns. Oh, man. So how's Foxtail? How's this game?
Well, to be fair, you got to have a pretty high IQ to get Foxtail. So I'll try to simplify. No, I'm kidding. Foxtail is cool. So yeah, I know, and I'm kidding. No, Foxtail is cool. It's very reminiscent of Sierra Online type point and click adventures. It reminded me a lot of that. So like King's Quest, Space Quest, that sort of thing. I was raised on that stuff. I love it. And I mean, right down to the fact that it's rendered very, very pixely. And that's not a knock, obviously. I adore that aesthetic. It's really well animated, really well drawn, and really blocky. So kind of beautiful on all counts, right? But yeah, it's a, you know, sort of a 2D point and click, sort of a gentle type game, you know, not really the sort of game you play because it's action packed, but it's all about discovery and obviously a lot of reading material. There's no voice acting or anything. And yeah, unfortunately, it's also very brief. I only got about 3 hours in, and then I was told to be continued. So it looks like I don't have a complete game yet to review.
Well, it which looks was like that's one of the perks of early access, I guess.
Yeah, but you know that it's that's not even really a criticism. More of a more. Give us more.
Give me more.
Exactly. You know, I'm 3 hours in. I'm told to be continued and seen. Well, you know, hopefully there's going to be more to it because it just starts building up steam right when you get there. The premise is you're an anthropomorphic fox teenage girl that I can tell. You arrive by train at grandmother's village and you get off the train to go find grandmother and you're sent on an errand to go fetch the ingredients to make tea. Because she doesn't want to start catching up with you until you have tea to go with the pie that she's made. It starts out very mundane and it develops very, very, rapidly from there. A lot of, exploration of your character's memories of her childhood in that village and, fond memories of her grandfather. And, that's sort of the drive for the beginning. And as you get further on into it and you in pursuit of the necessary ingredients for the tea, you have to solve a lot of puzzles, a lot of, you know, find this item, manipulate this item to create that item, bring this item over here and use it, that sort of gameplay. Yeah, so it's definitely not gonna be everybody's cup of tea, of course, but if you do like point and click adventures, it's probably pretty standard fare in that regard. Unlike a lot of the Sierra Online type games that I referenced, Space Quest, King's Quest, you don't die in it. You don't really have any sort of, you know, show-stopping encounters. You don't have any, I have to do it exactly this way or things are going to go badly, which was very common with King's Quest or Space Quest.
Very common.
Yeah, you know, you take a moment too long and you're locked in there forever, press the wrong button and you kill this person and that person was essential to completing the entire game, etc. You don't have any of those situations in this. So if That's you get good. Stuck... Yeah. If you get stuck, I mean, you have time to reflect on what are my choices? How can I fix this problem? And it looks like there's more than one way to go about things, and you might end up with some items that you don't actually need, too. So it's not perfectly linear either. There's more than one way to solve several of the puzzles that I dealt with.
Or you never know. Some of those items might be for future chapters. Looking at the Steam page, it says that they're planning to have 8 chapters, and what you have is just chapter 1.
Yes. So if each chapter is a good 2 to 3 hours of gameplay, it's going to be a pretty healthy game. A lot of stuff.
They said they're aiming for 20 plus hours of gameplay, and there's no timeline. Unfortunately, they don't have any kind of timeline. It's just as soon as possible, we hope to provide our players with a full-fledged product.
Yes. And if it all maintains that same level of quality, then I think it's definitely going to be worth keeping an eye on, too.
So the $7 asking price for right now, what do you think of it?
You know what? If the rest of the game is coming and it's going to be that quality, $7 is a great price. Absolutely. For the amount of game that you get right now for $7, it's not bad. I mean, it's a little tall. Because like I said, the game starts building up steam, gets real interesting, and then boom, to be continued. And you're done there. I think with the promise of more material, yeah, $7 is a great price. Absolutely.
Sounds good. And it really does. It sounds really good. So I wonder if they have any console plans for this one, or if it would be too difficult to get working on there.
You know what? It wouldn't be difficult. It'd just be a little tedious. It's all mouse. It is all mouse, literally. I don't even think I had a reason to touch the keyboard, although there are probably hotkeys to bring some stuff up. Like, you get a journal that you write in and you can, you know, review it for clues, but it's all point and click. So you could theoretically just do it with, you know, a D-pad or a stick in a single button, and it would be very playable. Just kind of tedious because a mouse, I think, would be faster.
Yeah.
But yeah, totally. If they do bring it to console, I think it'd be worth doing.
Nice. Obviously, the first goal is to get the Steam version finished and out.
Right. And, you know, it's I think it's pretty much going to be a complete package once they actually release the other chapters. Great sound, great visuals, great writing. It's all there. Just a matter of actually getting all of it to us now.
Play. Now it's the waiting game.
Yep.
Oh, man. Well, Royal, it is always good having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts on the game?
Let's go fishing.
All right, and final game to talk about tonight is called RBI Baseball 18, developed and published by MLB Advanced Media, released June 14th on the Switch for $29.99. It's a whole new ball game with RBI Baseball 18. RBI 18 takes a significant leap, delivering all new franchise mode, home run derby mode, brand new detailed player models, hundreds of new animations, and tons more. The MLB season gets the baseball game you've been waiting for to play it again. Typing his ass away and covering this one for us, Norg, how are you doing, baby?
Hey, what's up, girl?
Are you Californian now?
No, I was actually trying to take dictation while you were talking, just for giggles.
Okay, now read it back.
I can't because I just deleted it because it was covered with a bunch of garbled crap because I don't type as fast as I used to.
Control Z.
No. Okay, fine. Let's see. All right, and the final game to talk about is RBI Baseball 18 Developed by released June 14th on Switch for $29.99. It's a whole new game with the legacy during all new franchise mode, home run derby mode, player details, hundreds of new animations. The MBL game season gets the game you've been waiting for, typing his ass away.
That's pretty goddamn good.
Yeah, I used to type 120 words a minute and it all fell to shit.
I love the typos in there, though.
I know. Well, that was when I got frustrated right in the middle of the Erring. The erring at the end is my favorite.
Erring. Oh, so how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How's every little thing with you?
Doing pretty well. Just, you know, doing a show and having people on talking about games. I got this one guy on to talk about RBI Baseball 18.
Baseball! It's spelled B-A-E apostrophe S bowl. B-O-W-L. Baseball!
So how is RBI Baseball 18? I remember Bebe's Kids.
Bebe's Kids! I can't even do the voice. All right, so RBI Baseball 2018 on the Switch. So here we go. I'm going to come out of the gate and say it. I would probably have given this a higher rating at the end of the day if I hadn't played 17. So let's just establish that right now.
Okay.
The voice, I'm going to start with the bad category. The voiceovers are the same. The you're out of there, the when you get hit by a ball when the pitcher is just janking you, it's like, "Oh, ooh, that's gotta hurt." Just, it's all the same. You're out of there. Double play. All that's home run. So the sound.
If you've got good sound clips, why start from scratch if you got good ones?
Yeah, but this year they could have added ones that sounded like they were enthusiastic. Like they had an opportunity to go back and up their game. So like all the sounds are pretty much the same. The animation.
What they should do.
What should they do?
They should get you to be the umpire next year. So if MLB is listening, you're a voice actor. You could do that.
You're out of there! That's already better than anything I heard. So, see? I'm in on this.
Nice.
Let's make it happen, dude.
Let's make this happen. Call them. I'm going to start a hashtag.
Get me in every game. You know what? I mean, if you're going to get plunked by a ball, it should sound like, "Ooh, that's gonna hurt." You know, just get some feeling into this.
Wait, okay, do it in the Contra 4 voice.
"That's gonna hurt."
Nice. Okay, so anyway.
Right in the balls.
All right. I'd lose it if I heard that in a baseball game.
"That shoulder's gonna hurt in the morning." All right. So
okay. Anyway,
I think we've established that the sounds, the ball getting cracked and everything, foul ball, it's all pretty much the same. The animation and the graphics are just comical as hell. And I'm spoiled, but I expect better on a modern platform like the Switch. I expect a little bit more facial definition. I think they might have actually been going more towards like a 3D-ish cartoony kind of feel. It just didn't pull off. It looks janky. It's kind of crazy. The menu responsiveness, like when you're moving through the menus and stuff, feels really slow. Like there's definitely like a delay, and it takes a little while for the UI to catch up with all of the things that you're doing. this isn't a fair one because I put in the good part that there's a home run derby and it's fun at first. And then the home run derby gets real old real fast. 3 minutes of cracking home runs into the stands just gets tedious after a while. I ran through that mode twice and I was like, I don't ever need to do that again.
What more do you expect out of a home run derby?
Dude, have you ever played the home run derby on Super Nintendo's Ken Griffey game?
Eons ago.
Okay. See, that's fun. This wasn't as fun for some reason. And I think part of it is the fact that the animations and everything, and then waiting and watching the pop fly go, 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 go. Again, it's just the speed of things could have hummed along a little bit better, but so it didn't get tedious. Or maybe the home run derby didn't need to be like a full 180 seconds. Maybe it could be a shorter time period. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's still no crowd animations in the game. The crowd is static, like my laundry, just all kinds of static. And then the facial feature, I talked about it a bit on the animations and the graphics, but the facial features are just hilariously comical. And I try really hard not to laugh, but I had to laugh. Okay. So I got through most of the bad stuff. I'm going to go to the good before I get to the really ugly. Okay. So there are actual splash screens this time, and the intro was really well done, and there are transition screens and it looks more professional. I'm definitely going to give them that. There's music during the transitions in between each inning and in between each team going up to bat and so forth and so on. So that is cool. They're just little snippets of music. And sometimes I kind of wish that they would last a little bit longer, but if they did that, then I would have complained that it took too long. So
yeah,
I can't have everything. But that was cool. That added a bit of atmosphere that the game desperately needed. It added some life to it. This time around, they actually added a little bit of batting coaching at each bat. If you swing too early, it pops up a thing. It says you swung too early. If you swing too late, it says late. So you're getting some actual idea of, oh, this is how I can try to hit the ball better and get a shot at actually making some runs. Batting in the first incarnation in 17 was a nightmare, and the learning curve was tremendously steep. And even after the number of hours I put into it at the time, I still didn't feel like I had any kind of handle on it. This time around, I feel like I have a much better handle on batting, and that made it a lot more entertaining. The rosters get updated frequently. In just the little bit of time that I've had the game, there have already been 3 player rosters. And I think I played the Mariners the entire time because I'm from Seattle and that's the kind of nerd I am today.
Yeah.
And I think I saw a couple of, one of our guys got suspended for substance, testing positive on a substance thing.
Nice.
And next thing I know, he's not on my roster anymore. I was like, well, dang, that's current. That's cool. I'm totally into that. The fact that you can draft pre and post 1990 superstars, that is awesome. The full franchise mode was great. The options to play full or partial season, fantastic. The postseason mode, wonderful. That all really fleshes things out. I didn't get a chance to play an entire season of Bay Baseball because I just didn't have the game long enough, but I think I might have actually gotten to the point where I could have enjoyed playing an entire season, and I probably will to some point. So now we're going to go on to the things that really drove me bat guano crazy.
Let's hear them.
Okay. Frequently during load up before getting to the main menu, when starting the game, crash. It would freeze and then it would crash and it would take me back to the system menu. You try it again, loads up fine, no problem. There were a couple of in-game crashes as well. There was a really, really, it pissed me off so much I wanted to hurl my Switch. At one point in the middle of playing, I lost my internet connection on my router. No big deal. It kept popping up a screen every like 4 seconds telling me that I have lost my internet connection and that the game was not happy about it, but it didn't pause the game when it did it. So I'm at bat and it's flashing this screen on my telling me that I've lost my internet connection. And next thing I know, I miss a fastball and I'm like, fuck, that was a strike, you asshole.
Nice.
So that
not,
no,
not
that
nice was not. About the game, but just nice that it happened to you. I'm laughing at you, not with you.
You're laughing near me from yes. Pennsylvania. You fuck. And then the transition screens that I was referring to that were really that were a nice touch were super like janky and stuttery. And sometimes they would freeze halfway through the transition and then they would finish and then they would move on to the next thing. So it would stutter a lot and it just was not. I understand that they were trying to introduce some element of smoothness to it, but the smoothness wasn't there. It was a cool touch, but it didn't work very well most of the time. And then the load times. So correct me if I'm wrong. There are no disk drives on the Switch. Is that a true statement?
Correct. Yes.
Oh, okay. There are no disk drives on the Switch, and it's not a tape medium on the Switch, like a magnetic tape. That correct.
Is correct. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Good. So now that we've established, wait. No zip drives, right?
None I'm aware of.
Okay. No DAT tapes.
Yep.
Okay, and definitely not 512K floppy or 128K 8-inch floppy. Or 1.44 meg, the hard ones. God, what size were those?
Three and a quarter.
3.5. Okay. So no 3.5s. And,
it was a 3.25. Now I don't know. God damn it.
Either way, you know what I'm talking about. None yes. of these things, right? Okay.
Correct.
Cool. Okay. The load times are Commodore 64 without fast load cartridge abysmal in some cases. This is solid. This is solid fucking state, and I expect fast load times. PlayStation 1 transitions loaded faster than some of the things that were happening in this game. So that was a major source of frustration because gaming opportunities are very few and far between for me, and I devote a good chunk of time to making sure that I'm giving games that I'm reviewing a fair shake, and that means that, well, if I'm taking a shit, I'm playing baseball. And I,
the American way.
The American, seriously, who did not cheer their asses off when they found out that they could poop and play Skyrim? I mean, it's the American dream.
It is.
We are living, the future is now. So when I am pooping, I want to play baseball. I don't want to wait for baseball to load. If that makes any sense. And yeah. The load times were awful. The load times were terrible. I was a little disappointed in that. So I think that summarizes most of my experience with the game. Oh, I will say though, that from last year to this year, that thing where if you hit it and an infielder tries to catch the ball and drops the ball and it puts the error triangle above the player for having dropped the ball, it didn't crash this time around. It did that almost every time last year, even though I wasn't able to like get a video of it in trying to replicate it because the situation didn't come up enough because I wasn't very good at hitting balls last year. This year it happened like twice where the computer player dropped the ball, the error symbol popped up above his head, and then the game just continued playing. So They fixed that between last year and this year.
That's good.
So there it is.
Well, then overall, $30 on this one. What is your verdict?
If you're a baseball aficionado, then I would definitely try it because you're going to probably enjoy the franchise mode and the postseason aspect to it, the whole season thing. It's like that's the entire package right there. And if you're a baseball fan, you will probably look beyond most of the things that drove me bonkers and you'll give it a good shake. But definitely try it out. And then if you like it, buy it. If you don't, then blame Joe Kim.
So, well, you could blame me either way, but it sounds like it's at least a step in the right direction after last year.
I would love for the 19 iteration, if they actually make a 19 iteration, to kind of address some of those things. Just continue to make it more exciting and more immersive. Add bloody crowd animation, finally. Streamline the home run derby. Streamline your UI. Make the animations and graphics look a little bit less comical. Just up the game. Don't turn into fucking Madden, where all you do is just release the same stock bullshit year after year with slight upgrades and realize that people are just grateful for anything at all. You guys can be better than that. I believe it. I know you've got it in you.
You forgot one thing for next year.
What's that?
Hire you as the umpire.
Of course. Come on.
God damn
definitely
it.
Hire me. As, it, I can be bought. I really can.
Oh, man. George, it is always good having you on the show. Thank you
good
so much
here.
For joining. Thanks again to everyone else for coming on, doing their reviews. That is it for this episode. George, do you have any final words to end it?